Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jettisons, we welcome you once again to the car program, the Robitav car program. It is your phone-in program, and inshallah, any questions you have, please do give us a call on the number 011-854-1548. The SMS number for today's program is 082-580-8070, and the WhatsApp number is 072-786-1548. We'd like to welcome Brother Adil Mia on the program. Adil, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to Adil.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Maulana, and to all our listeners, welcome to the program.
Jazakumullah for your time, Adil. Yes, listeners, we have Brother Adil on the phone, and inshallah, any questions, like I said, you can direct it to us on the numbers that was mentioned earlier. Adil, first question coming through, how do you bleed the system after a thermostat change?
Most of them, different vehicles have different ways to bleed the system, but the most common way is to try and bleed it at the highest point. So, for example, if you put a new thermostat in the highest point where the radiator pipe is on top, advisable to remove the radiator pipe and then filling the water till the water pours out through the top of the radiator into the hose, and then you can connect up the hose and start the car, and get, when it gets hot, it should flow. But today in most modern day cars, everything is basically self-bleeding muscle. So what will happen is that once you put the thermostat in and you top the water up, leave the radiator cap off, and then start the vehicle, and once the water starts flowing and the thermostat is open, the water will drop slightly, and you just pop it up and close the cap. On some more high-performance engines, there are more trickier ways of cleaning it. You need a vacuum system, a vacuum pump, a vacuum gauge to bleed the system. That's probably more trickier, but you won't go into that. But for normal cars, basically most of the cars are self-bleeding. When it comes to BMWs, there's a bleeding screw on top of the radiator, so they don't basically loosen it up, pour the water in, and when the water starts flowing out there, when the car reaches normal temperature, you just close it up and they should be on your way, most.
Right, Jazakumullah for that, Adil. Adil, our brother's got a Chevrolet. He doesn't say which one, which type, 2004 Chevrolet. The key is sometimes hard to turn.
The most common thing on a key hard to turn is basically either the key is starting to wear out or the ignition itself starting to wear out. Or maybe the steering lock should also be checked, because normally to unlock the when you insert the key, you basically turn the key to unlock the steering so that the lock could be also jamming up. But the most common in my experience is that the key either worn out or the steering ignition lock worn out.
Okay. Adil, I think the brother, the Bucky you're driving as well, I think it's a Mitsubishi Colt double cab 2.8 TDI. The brother wants to buy one. It's a 1999 model. He says the person wants 50,000 rands. It's got 221,000 kilos on the clock. 50,000 rands, if it's a very good runner, I think it's a definite buy. Adil, how are those Buckys, the Colt Mitsubishi Colt double cab 2.8?
Good Buckys are very economical, very easy to maintain. Alhamdulillah, I got mine now for over 15 years.
Oh.
MashaAllah gave me good service, no complaints, change the oil regularly every 10,000 kilometers religiously. No major work done. It was basically only injectors, glow plugs, and the normal services and brakes. A very good bucket. Most of the most important thing on any car and any vehicle you buy or you purchase in or you use in, the most important thing, like we always mention on the program, is the regular oil change, the most of. This is the most important thing to remember and always to adhere to it. And try religiously every 10,000 kilometers or when the motor manufacturer specifies to change oil. Change oil does a world of a difference. You won't realize the effect that the clean oil does to your engine. And you'll even see the effect in long term. Most of the, as far as the Bucky is concerned, the price sounds good. And today, a Bucky is basically used to do work for yourself. Most of, so if it's a reliable Bucky, you can load, you can offload, it saves you a lot of hassle. You know, you don't have to go out there and lend a Bucky. And 50,000 is not a bad price to pay for a 1999 model. And plus, the kilometers are not so bad. Those Buckys, you know, they can go up to 300,000-400,000 if they maintain regularly. So I think inshallah is a good buy, most.
Inshallah, Jazakumullah for that, Adil. All right, we continue to listen. Any questions we have, inshallah, call us on the number 011-854-1548. The SMS number is 082-580-8070. And alternately, it's 072-786-1548. We're waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. Adil, the brother's asking the question, he's got a Bucky, a Ford Bucky. Can he bypass the anti-theft system so his Bucky will start?
You must have, it depends if it's a factory fitted anti-theft system. It is a bit tricky to bypass it, but there are ways. I wouldn't say there isn't a way. There is a way you can put the immobilizer off. You'll need special equipment to do that. or if you want to go physically into the unit, you'll have to trace the right, the correct sequence, and to find the MCU, the microcomputer for your unit that's responsible for the immobilizer, and you can either remove it or bridge it in that way. But if it's troubling him, then I think rather recommended myself. If it's 50 further, it's going to be a bit of issue. You have to take it to a Ford technician or someone who knows about Ford or the alarm system on the Ford cars. I know the Mercedes is not very easy to do it, and most modern day cars it is a bit difficult, but it can be done, not a problem.
Okay. Arden, the brother's got a Nissan Tida, 2009 model. What happens is he changed the brake discs, the pads as well. The problem still persists. He says when he brakes, there is a shudder on the steering wheel, and also there is a bit of a noise coming through. The brother says he was told by the mechanic that it could be possibly, the shocks in front that are worn out.
You know, there is a few factors that could lead to that problem. While braking, and he has a shudder in, the most common culprit in that is the brake rotors, better known as the brake discs, that can cause the shuddering when braking. The shock can also be a culprit. The shocks, you feel it more also when you're going over a bump and then you apply the brakes, or you're going over a bump and then accelerate again, you feel the car shuddering and shaking.
Yeah.
The shocks are worn out, so it's not very stable on the road. The other main culprit that can cause it is the lower ball joints can cause it also. The tie rod ends can cause it. The lower control arms can cause it problem also. So you need a few factors. So basically the correct diagnosis should be carried out and the problem should be solved. It's not a serious problem.
Inshallah. How does one diagnose a problem, Adil?
The best way to diagnose that problem is to drive the car and then apply the brake and then feel it on the steering wheel. If you feel the shudder coming through your foot on the brake pedal and onto the steering wheel while braking, then you know immediately it's a brake disc. When you're driving and you're going over the bump, and as soon as you hit the bump, you feel the steering start to shake, you know it. Then it's a shocks or one of the suspension components.
All right, Jazakumullah. We can't further, inshallah. The next question coming through, the brother says the driver brake light and the center tail light and the driver blinker lights out. That question doesn't make sense. Anyway, inshallah, send it to us again on 0825-808-070. We'll be waiting for the calls, dear listeners. Any questions you have, inshallah, direct it to us. And we'll be waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. Arden, the brother says, have you heard about the ultimate Toyota called the Tonka Hilux Bucky?
I even saw one. I never read anything about it, but it looks quite impressive.
Yeah.
I think it's in if I'm not mistaken, the way it looks like it, I think to take on the Ford Ranger, you know, the Wild Track.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that Hilux Bucky is made to compete against the Wild Track. I could be wrong. I didn't really read much about it, but I have seen a picture and I saw one today driving, and I even said, wow, what is that? It looks like a mean, awesome Bucky, and I think that's what I think. Like, when I looked at it, it looked really awesome. So maybe that is what I think they're trying to do, but we'll have to do some more research on that one for you, Musa.
Okay, yeah, it looks very nice, Adil. What's the 3 liters, Adil?
No, the one I saw, Musa, I just saw it all, you know, all the nitty-gritties on the outside, you know, the mag wheels and all the bumpers and the spoilers, and really looked awesome, like a Bucky out of the space age, you know. So I don't know if you ever see any pictures, Musa.
No, I just got the question here, but I think about 2 weeks ago I had a look at some photos. Really looks nice.
Yeah, the Buckies are going a long way in our country, Musa. But you know, they're really taking to people. You know, people are going for Buckies because they're looking good, they're driving well, there's all the luxuries and benefits, and then the most important thing, you've got the extra loading space. So I think today the people with big families and are really holiday goers, they're going that route because it's easy to load, and people, you know, and the passengers also are sitting in comfort, and you've got all the luxury as a car else also. So Bucky market alone in our country is taking off well, and all the top Bucky competitors are doing well. Also the Hiluxes, the Rangers, you know, the Mazdas, the Amaroks, they're all in the high caliber. So inshallah, it'll be interesting to see what Toyota comes up with that one.
Alright, gee. Adil, the brother wants to buy a Honda Civic 2000 model. It's a six-cylinder. What is your advice regarding six-cylinder vehicles?
The Honda Civic six-cylinder. I never heard of a Honda Civic in a six-cylinder muscle.
Gee, me too.
The English confused with the Honda, the bigger one. The name can't come to my mind right now. The Civic, and then you get the sucks it out of my... But anyway, they're not bad. Most of the 6-cylinder Hondas, they're not the Accord. Most of the 6-cylinder
Accord, yes.
Accord. The bigger Honda, so basically the flexible of the Honda. They drive really well, very smooth engine. Yeah, it's got some decent power. Basically, Honda, the engines they build, they're excellent engines. They really build good engines. The precision and the finishing of an engine is really well done. I see they don't have many issues with bearing knocks and sludging up. So as far as the 6-cylinders, the 4-cylinders, all Honda engines, they're excellent. The only problems with Hondas is on the age, the more cosmetic things and more... become a more rattle box because the things are not really more robust like the engine, but the engines outlast sometimes the car even most.
Okay. Adil, the brother wants to sell the Jetta 5 2010 model 1.6. How's those cars, Adil?
Most of the Jetta 5, the 1.6, they're proven cars. They're very reliable, they're very economical to maintain, and even the fuel consumption are excellent on those cars. They've proven most of the 1.6. I know a lot of people who drove the 1.6 Jetta, even the 1.6 Golfs. They're still driving them today. Very efficient on fuel, very reliable and economical car. It's not a bad buy, most of the mileages should be checked. And the most important thing, like we always mention, good service history also can improve the performance of the car and the longevity of the car.
Okay, Jazakumullah. We can't further. Adil, the question is regarding a Honda. It doesn't say which one, but the brother's got some trouble starting the Honda. And then at night it wouldn't start. He says, I fit a new fuel pump and it still won't start. It starts if I put fuel in the carb, but then stops when the fuel is gone. When I put in the carb, I would be grateful for any advices. What could be the problem? Possibly any pipes been blocked. What could be the problem, Adil?
The way the brothers explained to him, it must be a carburetor model Honda. So it probably be the 1980s to
the old 80s, yeah, you're right, yeah.
If I, because after it, Honda no longer made carburetor vehicles.
They
all into fuel injection. The most common culprit, on, as from my experience, is the fuel pump. So they gave they were issue on those cars. So I think the brother hasn't changed the fuel pump. And even try and use the correct fuel pump. If you can't get the original fuel pump, use a good replacement fuel pump, because there are some other brands out there that really don't do the job, and you have issues. Even putting new fuel pumps can have the same issue, and make sure that the fuel pump is fitted correctly, because you must remember on mechanical fuel pumps, they get the pump through the engine, so basically the camshaft pumps the fuel into the engine, I mean into the system. So make sure that your camshaft is not worn out, or the arm or the link that the camshaft turns the fuel pump is not worn out also. So those are the main factors to check: the fuel pump arm, the link, and the camshaft.
Okay. Adil, how often should the tires be rotated?
Most of the good practice to rotate tires between 10 and 15,000 kilometers, maximum up to 20,000 kilometers. It's a very good practice to do. So basically, you're sending your car into the service and let the mechanic or technician actually check your tires and let them rotate it, depending on how the tread wheel of the tire is, either back to front or crisscross back to front. But on modern day cars, some of the high performance cars, the tires cannot really be rotated, because of the rotational duration of the tire, and the front tires are normally smaller than the rear tires, so that will be a bit of an issue. But always take the advice of your technician and how you can be rotated. A very good practice, most of the tires will even last even longer.
Jazakumullah. All right, the SMS number once again is 0825 80 80 70, and the WhatsApp number is 0727861548. Added the question, the brother says he's got a Toyota Camry. He's got some suspension problems regarding the tire rod ends. What would it cost him to fix up the tire rod ends?
Most of the tire rod ends is a main factor on the vehicle. So basically, it's responsible for the steering of the vehicle. So
yeah.
If you're turning from left to right, so if a tire rod fails, it can be some serious consequences as far as it is concerned. The tire rods, most of the different brands of tire rods you can buy out there. The most important thing to remember, if you're buying suspension parts, always make sure that they have the SABS approval. So that means that thing is safe to fit to your car. Because if you're going to fit anyone into your car, like I explained, it can, if it breaks, there can be some serious consequences that can occur. Basically, you'll go in one direction and the car can go in another direction. That will be a serious thing. But just make sure it's a good, reliable part. It's a known brand and it has the SABS approval. That is more important. They range from about, they can go from 100 Rand to about 300-400 Rand most of the thyroid energy on those cars.
Okay, Jazakumallah. It's 28 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're tuned to Islam International. We take a short break. When we come back, inshallah, we continue. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Welcome to listeners. You're tuned to Islam International. Yes, so we continue with the car program. Any questions you have directly to us on 082-580-8070. Alternately, the SMS number or the WhatsApp number is 072-786-1548. 072-786-1548. Adil is on the line. Adil, assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh to once again.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Masaf and to all our listeners out there.
Jazakumullah for your time. Alright, Adil, one question coming through, inshallah. Let's try and help the brother here. It says, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm earning 6,000 rands a month. I think about buying Toyota Yaris, smaller one. Please advise.
Most of the, I don't know if the brother wants to buy the car and pay it off. I think that's what it's probably time to work out. There is a possibility he can do that. I mean, I won't go into the Sharia perspective, but for 6,000 Rand, yeah, he can probably pick up a Toyota Yaris and pay it off. I can cost him about, they're advertising them now. I see them on the paper and all over. You can even pick up one for 1,400 Rand. So it depends on how his monthly budget is. There is a possibility that he can pick up a car, but as far as the Sharia aspect is concerned, most of them, I don't know further than that. You'll probably answer it one better. But with 6,000, there is possibility. It just depends on how the rest of his budget is, most of
them. I just like enough for that. Like what I'm going to advise as well with regards to interest saving, stay far from it. I have a question coming through an Almera. The brother says it's a 1.6 2004 model. Sometimes whilst driving, it jerks or switches off. After a minute or two, it starts again. What could be the problem?
You see, problems like that, you know, it's very difficult to actually give you the answer spot on or to hit the nail on the head, like they say. A diagnostic test will have to be done. The main culprit, what come to mind is maybe the throttle body is but clogged up and therefore switching the car off. If the car starts immediately after it switches off, there could be a lot of factors leading to it. The throttle body could be one of them. There could be a earth wire that could have come loose, or there could be a faulty plug leads that could have come loose, or maybe a faulty fuel pump. Basically, a diagnostic test would have to be carried out, and then the culprit could be found. But if the car switches off and then takes a long time to start, also there could be a lot of crank angle sensor could be a problem, a coil could be a problem. Defective engine control unit can be a problem. So most of these, a lot of factors, they're going to be difficult to actually pinpoint. But basically, that the listener should take it to a technician and have a diagnostic test done, and then we can further rule out the possibilities and probably come to the answer.
Yeah. Other than building up an engine, should the crankshaft bearings always be replaced?
When building up an engine, 100% the crankshaft bearings should be replaced. It depends what caused the engine failure in the first place. But always recommend that if you're going to machine the crankshaft, always advisable to replace it with new bearings and make sure that the bearings and the crank journals are always machined properly. And cleanliness is the highest importance. Most of what you must remember, the important factor on the engine is the precision work. That means the zero defect as far as the bearings run onto the crankshaft. If that you got correct, most of the engine going to last you a long time.
Jazakumallah. Adil, with regards to the engine bearing, what are the causes, some of the causes of the engine bearing failure?
One of the number one cause of engine bearing failure is poor oil quality. That means you're using an oil that is of a poor quality or unsuitable for the vehicle. Especially today in modern day engines, the highest quality of oil should be used. You see, like you go to different places and you get different prices for services, you know. You basically see guys who are advertising a service for $5.99 or $6.99 or $4.99. Like today, Hafez Zakaria, he bought his car for a service to us, and you look at the price for a service, you think to your mind, you know, back in the day when I started as an apprentice, you could service your whole car and do brakes and everything for that amount of money. But today, you can only do a normal service with that kind of money. But you think of the quality that goes into the service. So basically, the oil you use, I was just looking at Zakir Inwood, and that the oil was one of the highest because the oil is full synthetic oil. It's not a cheap oil. So basically, if you looked at it and you took away the oil, the service would have been half that price, you see. So it's important to realize that what you get in value for your money foremost. So you see, a lot of people, when they go out there and service a vehicle, they're more price conscious. They're not seeing the value. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there are people out there who are charging high prices and using low quality. That is wrong, you cannot do a thing like that. But I'm saying, for $5.99, what quality of oil are you getting? You know, is there really a good quality oil out there for that price? Or use a good quality oil, a fully synthetic oil, which is recommended on modern day cars. So that basically, the failure of crankshaft bearings most of the time is poor quality oil. And the other culprit is not servicing the car on time. So basically, you're prolonging the service. So if the service intervals are at 10,000 kilometers, you know, you start missing the services. And religiously, if you bring your car in every 10,000 kilometers, you'll even see the effect of the engine. For example, you see how good the engine sounds, because you can see religiously every 10,000 kilometers is changing oil on the car. It is important. The rest of the car can be here and there, you need some work, but the engine still sounds good and even performs well. So basically, it comes down to what we always discuss, that service the car regularly. Don't penny wise and pound foolish, or like they say, good quote for the dear quote, you know. Do it properly, pay the extra button, get good quality stuff. And there are really good quality stuff out there at a reasonable price also. So we really don't have to go and pay high prices for quality stuff. There are, if you do your homework properly, you can really pick up good quality stuff at a reasonable price also.
Adil? Apologies for that. What about a caliper, Adil? Replacing a brake caliper requires quite a bit of work, Adil?
A brake caliper is basically the caliper that's put onto the tire. It's not a lot of work, but you've got to know how to replace it, because when you're replacing a brake caliper, you're going to have to loosen the brake hose, the brake fluid hose, which has to be removed. So basically, you're removing that, and you replace the caliper, you're going to need to bleed the brakes also. So that will be a bit tricky, but there's only two bolts holding the brake caliper, so you just loosen the two bolts. But you have to take the wheel off first, hoist the car up, remove the two bolts, to remove the brake pipe, replace the caliper, put the brake pipe back with the two bolts, and then bleed the braking system. Always remember, when you bleed in the braking system, start with the brake caliper furthest away from the brake master cylinder. So for example, if your brake master cylinder is on the right hand side of the vehicle, you're going to start with the left rear brake caliper. So it's the furthest away from the brake master cylinder.
Okay, lovely. Ali, the brother wants to know regarding the Mercedes-Benz from the 123 series. You know, it's been called 1W or W this, W that. He wants a gist of the models of the Mercedes-Benz, Ali.
In different classes, you'll get the different models. So basically,
what does the W stand for?
All the models, I think we're going to talk till such a time.
See, what does the W stand for?
So maybe if you want to, we can just discuss the C-Class range.
Say till 2010, 2007.
Yeah, till 2007, we talk of different models. Like I said, you get the A-Class, you get the B-Class, you get the C-Class, the E-Class, the S-Class, the ML. So basically, we'll just go through quickly. The C-Class is the most common.
Yeah.
Benz that you can find in our country, over 1.5 million sold of each class. So basically, you got the first C-Class was the W201. It was the 190E range. So you got a 190E, you got a 180, and you got a 190E 2.3. That was the high performance one. Then after 1996, they stopped the 201 series, then they launched the 202 series. That's the one, like Hafez Zakir has one. You've got a few models in those. You've got the C180, the C200. You've got a C250 diesel, a C250 turbo diesel.
Okay.
And you've got a C43, but we didn't get many of them in our country.
So these
and
models are called the W202.
They introduced the W203 series. That's the one with the rounded lights in front.
And oh, yeah.
Those, you've got the C180, the C200. The C230, then they introduce the C32, the AMG, and now you get the C55.
There is C240 as well in those models, Adil?
40, the one you came with the other day.
Yeah,
you get a C70 CDI and a C220 CDI. Then from the year 2007, they introduced the W204 series most of that one's is the one before the new one. So there you got a lot of models also. You got the C, they introduced the C63, the AMG came in that model, and then you got the CGI model came in there, the compressed gasoline injection with a turbocharger.
Okay.
They introduced some new engine into that model. And then from 2014 onwards, you got the W205, which is the latest one that is on the market right now. And the different variants, they also, they improved on the C63, they gave it a twin turbo, and you got some more models in there, and you got the stop-start go system, where you, when you come to a stop seat, and the car will switch off, and when you take off again, it'll start going. So basically, the technology is increasing, and you got a whole lot of extra features. You got lane assist, and you got the suspension assist, and sleep assist, you know, where you don't fall asleep in the car, a whole lot of extra technical aspects to the vehicle, which has improved a lot. What we can say is that are you really getting value for your money? That's the question you have to ask me.
Jazakumallah. Adi, the brother who sent a question earlier regarding the Toyota Yaris, is earning 6,000 rands a month. He wants to know regarding maintenance of the cars, you know, how is it on petrol, what about the parts on this car? Is a Yaris cheap to maintain?
See, most of the Yaris is not a bad car to maintain. I maintain a few Yaris for some of our customers. They're very economical. The only issue is when the Yaris are a bit expensive, but not really a breaking arm and leg, is when you got to do major repairs. For example, whether it's on any vehicle, like shocks and brake discs and clutches, you need to do that, can be a bit expensive. Not very expensive, but maintainable. The normal services is not expensive, between 1,000 to 1,500, and even less than that you can do a service. And the vehicle is serviced every 15,000 kilometers, so it depends how far the brother is going to be driving. If he's not traveling very far to work, so he basically, from minimum calculation, which an average motorist does with his vehicle a year, is about 20,000 kilometers. That's what most of the people do with their vehicles. So basically, in that accordance, he'll probably service his car once or maximum twice a year. So basically, if he can put away about 200 or 300 rand a month, he should cover his services during the year.
Jazakumallah. Adit, the brother says he's got a Toyota Camry, he's got a humming or growling noise when he turns. Is it because of the, would it be the inner CVs or the outer CVs?
Most of the humming and growling noise when he turns, the main culprit for that one could be a loose fender. Can cause a humming and grinding sound, or a worn out power steering pump can cause it. The CV joints will make more of like a clunking noise, like a clattering noise when it turns. It won't really make a humming noise. Or the other culprit could be a wheel bearing, could be also worn out on that vehicle. So those things should be checked, what I just mentioned now.
Jazakumallah. All right, we go on further to listeners. Just a few minutes remaining before we terminate the program. Number to call is 011-854-1548. The WhatsApp number is 072-786-1548. Adil, the BMW X1 S-Drive 2010 model, it's got 125,000 kilos on the clock. I don't have the retail in the sales book, but the brother says 140,000 rands. Is the price reasonable? You can advise us more, Adil, and how are those cars? BMW X1 S-Drive 2010.
2010 model, Mosa, for that price, I think it's a very good deal. Depending, did you mention the kilometers, Mosa?
The kilos are 125,000.
I think that's a fair buy, Mosa. That's a really good deal. It's getting the 2010 model, a lot of value for that car. A nice commuter for a mom and the kids, because there's a lot of space in the back. You can load up the kids in the car and put all the school stuff in the back. Nice, comfortable car to drive. My sister actually had one. A nice, impressive car, comfortable car. Does your basic needs, so basically for your grocery shopping, picking up the kids and talking to the kids. I think it's a fair buy, most of the, for 140,000, I don't think you're going to get a car with that caliber and that mileage at that price.
Sure. Call on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Mulana, I'm driving a Corsa 1.4 utility. Hello?
Yeah, Gigi, go ahead.
And yesterday I was traveling to Durban early in the morning, and I got stuck in traffic, and my heat gauge went up. But what I did is I managed to come out of the traffic and travel as far as maybe about 10 kilometers, and the heat gauge was about 3/4. And then it had a slight mess also after that. But then I stopped for a while. I waited for about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and I put some water into the radiator and continued to where I was going to my destination. I parked the vehicle off, did whatever I had to do, and then I left back from Durban back to Escort. And when I came back from, oh, it still had the must, but the car was going normal, the van was going normal. There was no, like, when you were accelerating, there's no problem. But if the car is idling and you find there's like a, the idling is not right, it's like a, got a must.
Mm-hmm.
So I came as far as Moira, where the heat gauge went up again. Then I stopped, but the radiator itself was, when I stopped at Moira, where the toilet, the radiator kept, the radiator was still cold, it wasn't hot. But although the heat gauge went right up. So nevertheless, what I did is I parked for another 15 minutes, put the water into the radiator, and I traveled to Escort. But the heat gauge kept on fluctuating. It went high, then it went low, then it went high, then it went low. Then I came to Escort, and then I went, I thought it's maybe most probably a plug, one of my plugs, that what's causing the mess was the plug. Then I took it to the mechanic. The mechanic tested the one plug was faulty, the one plug is faulty, and he checked the radiator, there's nothing wrong with the heating, he doesn't know why the car was heating. So he took the one plug out and he checked that the one plug wasn't firing properly. Then he took one of his second-hand plugs, he took out the original plug that was on the engine, he put one of his second-hand plugs in, the car was still not, was firing. So what do you think would be the problem? He thinks it's a valve. He reckon he's not sure. What he told me, what he advised me, the cheapest way to do is to buy a set of new plugs, put it on and see if the vehicle will work properly. If it doesn't, then most probably he thinks it's a bent valve, one of the valves are bent. Is that possibly a good diagnosis?
Yeah, possibility. Adi, what about the idling wheels now?
Jim, what's up? The brother has got two issues with his vehicle. The first issue is the overheating issue, which he mentioned that the radiator was staying cold. That's an easy solution, but your thermostat is a problem there. The thermostat should be replaced. It will sort your overheating problem out, because when the car reaches normal temperature, it's not opening the thermostat to let the water flow. So that's why the car overheated and lost the water, because you know, remember, cold air sinks in hot air, or hot water rises, throwing the water out to the radiator kit. So that's why you lost the water. So the thermostat should be changed. The misfire started after the car overheated, because heat can cause damage to a lot of aspects on the vehicle. I don't think you should go as far as a valve, because you say when the car is driving at full speed, it's moving perfectly, only when it's idling. So basically, the mechanic is on the right track. Put a new set of spark plugs in there, should solve your problem. If not, check the plug wires, because the heat has caused your problem. So basically, after the car overheated, you got the misfire. So maybe destroy the plug or even a plug wire. So basically, not a very expensive fix. You can just change the thermostat, use a good quality thermostat, and then put a set of plugs, and thereafter you can go further, and if it still misfires, tie the plug wires.
Okay, and now what I want to tell you also is, about a month ago we changed my water pump was leaking, so what the mechanic did, he changed the water pump and put a new thermostat in, but it wasn't an original thermostat, it was...
See, there is a problem, that's why I said use a good quality thermostat. I had the same issue with the Opel Corsa. If you don't use the original or good quality thermostat, you're going to keep on having the issue. And even the water pump, make sure you're using a good quality water. Rather spend the extra rent, like we were just talking about now, me and Moss, about the good quality oil. The same way, as far as parts are concerned, use a good quality brand, something that is known. Like, for example, the GMB water pumps, they're known. The Echelon thermostat, they're known. Or make sure that, or even the, there are a few other brands out there that can be used. Just make sure they are proven and they are reliable brands.
The quality costs
extra work. And on an Opel Corsa, it's a bit of a job to change the water pump and a thermostat. It's not an easy job.
No, but now to change the thermostat only, we put a very good quality water pump, but the thermostat wasn't the original, it wasn't a very good quality one.
And go for the good quality thermostat, your problem should be sorted out.
Inshallah. Jazakallah khair.
Inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Adil, my brother, jazakallah for the lovely program, for your help as well. I learned a great deal, and much appreciated, Adil. Inshallah, Allah willing, we'll talk again next week.
Now, you know, the holiday started, the Easter weekend is coming up, mashallah, the brothers will be all heading to the Ishtima. The basic thing, what we should remember always when you're traveling, to be courteous on the road. You know, we all will reach our destination. Some of us want to try and reach there faster, but don't be uncourteous. I think most of the time also the worst problem on the road is people are not courteous. You know, they're always rushing. They always don't want to give the guy who's coming into the lane. And someone overtakes you, you want to try and overtake them back. It doesn't work like it. You show good character on the road also. And others traveling to Ishtima also, try and take a few people in your car. Don't try and go alone, because always the logistics at the Istimal also, you know, the parking can be an issue. So the less we go with vehicles, it'll be easier for them also to direct the traffic and to provide parking for the brothers also.
Amen, inshallah. Abdul, jazakallah for your help, my brother. All the best, and inshallah, enjoy the weekend.
Jazakallah, you too, Masa. Jazakallah.
Assalamu alaikum to all of you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. 7 minutes to 9 o'clock. We conclude the car program, dear listeners. We conclude this program, inshallah. From myself, Muhammad Kara, and brother Adil Mia. Have a lovely weekend, inshallah. Relaxed weekend. Request for du'as. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.